the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
John Gibbons joins us now for the last word on the environment. Good evening to you, John.
Good evening, Frank.
Climate change was a big talking point with our Gen Z panel earlier, and that's where we start today, John, because a new study doesn't bode well for the world's emperor penguin colonies, and climate change is to blame, it seems.
That's right, Frank. Emperor penguins, they're currently still quite plentiful in the Antarctic. They're only found, of course, in the Antarctic. And these are the largest species of penguin in the world. There's currently about 280,000 breeding pairs. And this latest study projects that by the end of the century, we have the emperor penguin will be functionally extinct. So they're talking about the 98% decline in their numbers. And in the shorter term, this is the next three decades, they estimate that two-thirds of all the colonies will be what's called quasi-extinct. And quasi-extinct means that while there are still members of the species left, they're so few and their habitat is so degraded that they're functionally extinct. In other words, they're committed to extinction. So it's fairly grim news all around. And I guess the main reason driving this, Frank, is the loss of sea ice. This is the seasonal ice that forms attached to the mainland in Antarctic. And basically, I suppose, if there isn't enough ice, then chicks can be drowned. For example, there was an incident that was well recorded in the Weddell Sea in Antarctica in 2016. And what happened basically was there was a record low sea ice that year, and the ice broke up early, and more than 10,000 emperor penguin chicks were drowned because the sea ice that they have to basically mature on before they're old enough to enter the water. If that sea ice breaks up prematurely, basically they drown. They've got no protection against the elements like that. So I suppose it's important to say these creatures are phenomenally well adapted to the world's most hostile environment. They have survived there with no natural predators for millions of years. And here we are seeing in the space of a few decades, this incredibly successful, unbelievably hardy species facing extinction and disappearing from the world for all times. So it's a very, very sobering thought. And as you said in the outset, what's driving this, of course, is climate change, which we're seeing its impacts all over the world. We're seeing them this in the summer of 2021. We don't need to go over that again today. And this climate crisis is reaching into every continent and into every region of the world. And of course, the Antarctic, despite its vastness and despite its remoteness, is intrinsically connected to everything that's happening in the world. And as I say, these dramatic changes in sea ice patterns, the loss of sea ice cover, changes in patterns. The Antarctic is a very volatile system, and there are other seasons, and there will always have been seasons where penguins will have been lost. It's a very difficult environment. The difference, Frank, here this time is the scale and also the seeming irreversibility of this.
Sea ice cover having shrunk by over 60% in three decades. Like, that is a startling figure. Read before we did this piece, before we came on air today, that one emperor penguin colony has already virtually disappeared. So we're already seeing this slow extinction of this beautiful species of animal.
Yeah, and to put it in context, Frank, when I was looking this up earlier, I came across a 2014 study. This was from 7 years ago. And that study warned that emperor penguins could decline by one-third by 2100. So unfortunately, what we're seeing here as we progress rapidly into this climate emergency, that the scientific studies are chasing or racing to keep up with it. So we've gone from an estimate in 7 years of a one-third decline to a 98% decline. So as I say, if this isn't a wake-up call, I don't know what is.
Gosh, but they've had so many bloody wake-up calls, and it's not like you can take these colonies of emperor penguins and plop them somewhere else.
No, absolutely. As I say, these are the supremely adapted animals. Absolutely supremely adapted. If you or I were left out on an ice floe in Antarctica, we wouldn't survive overnight. This is extraordinarily hostile conditions. So these are tough critters. Other human pressures, Frank, that's worth mentioning as well, of course, is part of the food supply for penguins is a small little shrimp-like creature called krill. And of course, the world's fishing fleets have been down emptying the Antarctic Ocean of krill because it's used for this thing called krill oil, which apparently is some kind of health supplement. So we're basically taking their food supply, which of course requires penguins to go further and further out to find disappearing food, which has been taken by predatory fishing fleets, because of course there's no regulations. Anybody can go in there and catch anything. It's basically open season on the high seas, and it's tough times for penguins.
Yeah, let's talk about another story that caught my eye, and this is an effort, I suppose, to protect an entirely different species. This is a plan by the EU to ban lead from ammunition in hunters' weapons. Why have they decided to go down this road?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. And the numbers, Frank, are extraordinary. Just, right, put it this way. Every year, European manufacturers produce 150,000 tons of lead ammunition. And according to the European Chemicals Agency, 100,000 tons of lead is randomly dispersed into the environment, into waterways, into bogs, into forests, into grasslands. And this is 100,000 tons of lead being fired by hunters. They broke it down. They said 79% of this is coming from what they call sports shooters, 14% from hunters, and 7% from the lead used by fishermen. And basically, I think what's important to say here is lead is a powerful and dangerous neurotoxin. We have banned, for example, lead in paint. We have banned lead in petrol. We now, of course, have unleaded petrol only. We've banned and we're trying to get rid of lead in piping. We know that lead is a powerful and dangerous neurotoxin. And I suppose the tragedy, if you like, for the use of lead by extensively being used by hunters is that they kind of kill twice. First of all, obviously, it's used as ammunition, and that's fine. But on top of that, in Europe, for example, every year an estimated 1 million water birds are poisoned and die of lead poisoning. And it also kills not just water birds, but it's also killing eagles, vultures, and condors. This is in the US, particularly condors. So almost over 40% of condors that were found dead had died as a result of lead ingestion. Essentially, when they ingest it, see, birds ingest grit into their gizzard, which they need to digest tough foods. And as they do that, they mistake the lead for grit. They ingest the lead, and inside their stomachs and in their gizzards, that lead then basically reacts. And they're poisoned. Yeah. So it's a really, really toxic. Now, I had a chat with Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland, the wonderfully named Niall Hatch from Birdwatch Ireland earlier. And he pointed out that Birdwatch Ireland, they favour a ban. And at the moment, Frank, the only thing that's on the table is a ban of the use of ammunition in wetland areas because they're particularly sensitive areas. Now, this is kind of crazy. Basically, we need to get the lead out right across the board. And Niall totally agreed with this. And he said, yes, Birdwatch Ireland support a full ban on lead. And by the way, there are alternatives. For example,
of a pushback from the industry, from, you know, the people who make this ammunition?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. It seems to be the reflex everywhere we look, every time regulators try to bring in changes to protect public health. And this is a public health issue, by the way. It's not just animals that have been killed by this. Human health has been affected by the consumption of contaminated game meat is causing brain damage among children in particular who consume it. So yes, unfortunately, you get industries, you get hunting groups who take that sort of dog in the manger position, opposed to change no matter what. And unfortunately, we've had 20 years of Europe saying we need to remove lead from our ammunition. And by the way, this isn't about a ban on hunting. I think it's very important. This is often presented, Frank, as if people want to ban hunting. No, it's not. What they're saying is they want to ban the use of a deadly poison as part of hunting. So the hunter, fine, use your shot, use it legally, that's fine. But what we're doing is we're spraying 100,000 tons of untraceable lead into our environment. So every time you see a guy fire a shotgun, about 100 little lead balls are sprayed out. Now, there's no way of getting them back. They're not even magnetic. There's no way of recovering them. Mm-hmm. And they end up contaminating the soil and they end up in our water system. So essentially, we have rightly got lead out of as many parts of our ecological system as possible. As I mentioned, we've removed it from petrol, from paint, from piping. And yet here we have this anomaly that it's still legal to use it in shooting. And hopefully this is something that we can move away from as quickly as possible.
Fingers crossed. We're almost out of time, but I do want to ask you very quickly just about this new World Bank report, which suggests that the collapse of one ecosystem could have a huge effect on the world's finances.
That's right, Frank. This is a report called The Economic Case for Nature, which I had to laugh when I read. Well, imagine having to make an economic case for nature. But anyway, we'll leave that aside. They estimated that the global economy by 2030, it will be costing it $2.7 trillion a year in lost GDP. This is a result of the loss of ecosystem services that are currently provided by free. Some examples would be wild pollinators, the kind of food you get from marine fisheries, timbers from forest and so on. And this has been this calculation has been made that these are the losses that we're looking at. And the World Bank, for example, they say that they're supporting up to $1.2 billion a year in biodiversity programs. And I was doing a little bit of background on this, and I was, you know, very impressed up to a point, until I then discovered that since 2015, the same World Bank has invested over $12 billion in supporting and promoting and funding fossil fuel projects. So it's basically, coming from the World Bank, it is do as I say, but not do as I do.
OK, John Gibbons, we'll have to leave it there.